and welcome to the Pocket Gamer Podcast. It's episode number 487. My name is James Gilmore. Joining me today is Matthew Ford.
Hello.
Got no Dan this week. He's off, I think, in London doing event things, which I was doing earlier in the week. We had a little impromptu mini conference thing, a mini summit with Mintegral, who do a lot of stuff where they're trying to transition games between the East and the West, which is a recurring theme in our podcast, because it turns out you can't just release a Western game in, for example, China or Japan and expect it to just work.
Shopping.
Yeah, I know, weird that. But it's a weird thing that a lot of people don't think about, understandably, because it's a massive cultural differences and you need to kind of market the game differently and even change things like the UI so that it makes sense to what they're used to and vice versa. You can't just plonk Japanese games over here. So it's really interesting, for me at least, to see the subtle tweaks and changes that have to be made. One of the most important ones being, don't localize your game's text by using Google Translate.
No, I imagine that would be quite embarrassing in some ways.
You'd be surprised how many games, and we review plenty of them of every week here at PG, of course, and a lot of them have clearly been done by Google Translate or something similar, and it's like, it clangs every time. Granted, it's because people don't necessarily have huge teams and loads of money and loads of time, so I get it, but it makes a lot of difference. And
I was going to say, it's normally blatantly obvious as well when you're reading some text and you're like, this doesn't seem like it's translated correctly.
No, and it's just the same on both sides. I'm sure a lot of Western developers, not indies, kind of have to do it because they just got no time. And so they, and lots of people in Japan are going, what the hell is this? but yeah, little tips and tricks. So the videos will be going up live on PG if you want to see people who know about this stuff talk about this stuff. So it's quite interesting. Anyway, back to more core games things for us and our interests. We're going to be doing some news this week consisting of Pokemon. Nothing but Pokemon. Non-stop Pokemon. You thought you wanted one Pokemon game. You thought you wanted two. Pokemon Go, Pokemon Rumble Rush will have like 20 more or four more. I don't know. Load. Anyway, we'll cover it. We've also got chat about Microsoft and Sony teaming up. The two greatest rivals in the console industry, shaking hands, making friends, and doing the cloud gaming thing together in harmony. What does this mean? Also, we've got new releases this week, including the likes of Very Little Nightmares, Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap, Death Hall, Warriors of Waterdeep, WWE Universe, and more. But first, the news. We talked about Pokemon Rumble Rush, which came out last week. You can go and see the new tips and tricks and stuff we have up on PG for that game, and also the hands-on video, What I Did, which is now up. But that apparently is just the beginning. So we've had a few Pokemon games on iOS now, the most impressively huge and successful of which is Pokemon Go, but also you've got the Pokemon TCG trading card game and stuff like that, and obviously Rumble Rush as well. So there was a press conference earlier on in the week that I didn't see, but you did, Matthew, and it was talking about all things Pokemon. What have they got up their sleeves?
They've got everything, apparently. So they announced this press conference. It was one of the classic, I'd say Nintendo, but it's Pokemon Company thing, of being like, the press conference is tomorrow. It's 2 o'clock in the morning for us in the UK, but, you know, be there, basically.
Yeah.
And they came out and revealed four new games.
Right.
And some very bizarre ones as well. So you say you didn't watch the press conference, is that right?
I didn't. I did not watch it at 2 a.m. However, the only one I heard come off the back of it, and I think it's the one that we covered first, was Pokemon Sleep?
That's the sleeping one? Yes.
What is this?
So we're not entirely sure, to be honest. They basically built it up and they showed a trailer which looked like Pokemon Go. Mm-hmm. And they showed all the players walking around the world and they're building up the kilometers of how much everyone's walked. And it was building up, building up, building up. And then it cuts to somebody sleeping. And then a little Pikachu crawled in and jumped into bed. And then it just revealed Pokemon Sleep. And everyone's like, what?
Okay.
For Pokemon Go, there was Pokemon Go Plus. I think that was the name of it. It was a little device.
That's right. The little tracker which went with the Pokemon Go game, right?
That's right, yeah, and you attach it to your bag or whatever, and then it would pick up Pokemon for you without having to actually open the app.
Yes.
So the Pokemon Company announced the Pokemon Go Plus Plus.
Right.
Which is the best naming convention ever, and this is apparently going to be next to you as you sleep, and a gameplay experience like no other, to quote them.
So from what I've read about it is that you get an accelerometer added to the Pokemon Go Plus tracker thing. So it knows basically when you're still for a long period of time, and it's assuming, presumably, that you're sleeping. I don't know how it can tell the difference between me just sitting on the sofa for 4 hours playing something versus me sleeping, but still, apparently, it's using the accelerometer to track your day-to-day steps and whatnot, and then your sleep patterns, which sounds like, as Dan pointed out in the article, sort of a gamified Fitbit.
Yes, absolutely.
But I've no idea how they're going to make this into a gameplay experience, Bon. You wake up and turn your phone on and, I don't know, Pikachu's had a mad party in your absence, or depending on how long you sleep, you get perks, or how does it know how well you sleep? Surely it can only deal with, like, duration. I'm not sure how sort of 6 to 8 hours of inactivity can be turned into a meaningful and exciting gaming experience.
No, I mean, it's just basically the Pokemon company thinking, so how can we get people to play Pokemon more? I mean, we've got them playing Pokemon Go, you know, every hour of the day they've got free. And then somebody in the boardroom's clearly gone, well, people sleep for like 8 to 10 hours a day, so we should take advantage of that and just release Pokemon Sleep. It's very bizarre, but I am excited to see what it is. I mean, it's not coming till 2020.
Okay.
And they are working with Niantic on it. But yeah, what is it actually going to be?
Weird. Just leave me alone when I sleep. I don't know. I need little bits for myself. I feel like this way with the Amazon Echo and all those like a tracky voice recording things where I'm just like, I need little bits of time that are for me. And yeah. Sleep. I love games, don't get me wrong, but I don't need to be told that I'm also gaming in my sleep. And somewhere a game is judging me on how long or how well I sleep, and it's going to give me chivos based on either of those things. That sounds like too much pressure to me.
So, yeah, I think the one thing that they have to do is make sure it comes with Jigglypuff lullabies.
Okay.
To sing you to sleep. That's such a missed opportunity if they don't go for that. I mean,
if it's a sleeping aid, then yeah. Okay, yeah. I'm down with that. That'll be fine. So that was one of them, and that's one of the first ones we covered. What else did they dish out? Because that wasn't the end of it, was it?
So they announced a Detective Pikachu sequel for the game, not the movie.
Right.
And that's coming to Nintendo Switch, and it will provide an alternative ending to the film, because
okay.
My understanding is the Detective Pikachu game, which I didn't play, ended on a bit of a cliffhanger.
Right.
And that was sort of resolved in the movie, and now this new sequel that's coming to Nintendo Switch will give a new alternative ending of some sort. So,
are they going to get Ryan Reynolds to voice it?
I doubt it. Yeah, it'd be nice. Or Danny DeVito is what everybody would like.
Yeah, but I'm just thinking if it's coming off the back of the movie and that, will people expect to sort of see it reflected in the game, or they're going to keep it like church and state separate?
Well, he did have a grizzled voice in the original, if I remember.
Yeah, that's what I heard. He was all noir detective.
So they announced that, and then they did a hilarious tangent at one point where they were talking about the Detective Pikachu film,
mm-hmm.
and then just went, oh, by the way, the new Godzilla film's out this week. I know that's nothing to do with this, but you should go see this. And they just like randomly promoted that. Right. And then it went back to the other, they had like two people on stage, and it went back to the Pokemon Company president, Ishara, and he was just like, thank you for that. I don't know why you talked about Godzilla, but thank you. it was so bizarre.
Do they have 11 playing on a Nintendo Switch at some point during that film before Ghidorah comes smashing in through the roof and crushes her tiny little face?
Yeah, if we see some blatant advertising like that, we'll know something's been going on. So,
yeah, okay.
But so alongside that, they announced a storage solution called Pokemon Home.
A storage? What? Like a briefcase? Or I presume this is some online cloud thing?
It's a cloud thing, yes, for Switch right. and your mobile, basically. The app's going to allow trainers to transfer Pokemon from different iterations and keep them current, which is, I know, a very highly requested feature. So this was a great decision. It only starts from Pokemon Let's Go, I believe. So it includes Pokemon Go, Pokemon Let's Go Pikachu and Eevee, and then the upcoming Sword and Shield releases.
Right. So it's kind of an online Pokedex, and you can switch and port them between the different versions of the games.
Correct. So they've had Pokemon right. Bank on 3DS for a number of years. So you've had to pay $4.99 for that in the past. So we're guessing it's going to be
what?
around that range.
I'm aware of Pokemon as a cultural phenomenon, and I have even played a couple of the games a bit, but I'm so, like, not into the proper universe of it all, and I've played all the games and everything. I had no idea you had to subscribe to a Pokemon bank for a fiver a month just to keep your Pokemons.
No, it's a fiver a year.
Fiver a year? Oh, okay, yeah. That's not so bad. But
yeah,
still.
I was going to say a fiver a month would be pretty ludicrous.
Okay, all right then. So what's, I'm just looking down the list here, random stuff. What the hell is Pokemon Masters?
Ah, so this is the one that actually really interests me. So this is the DNA game that was previously announced a couple months back. So they were working with the Pokemon company.
Right.
So they're bringing back Pokemon trainers from the history of the franchise. And it's looking very similar to a traditional Pokemon gameplay.
Okay.
It looks sort of a mix of that and Fire Emblem Heroes in some way, maybe. Again, it was only a brief trailer and they briefly talked about it. So unsure what, but that's the newest one that's arriving before the end of 2019.
Mm-hmm.
And we should actually find more information out about it next week in a Pokemon Sword and Shield Direct. So that's due to take place on June 5th at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, where we're getting all new information on Sword and Shield before that obviously releases in November. And then they're going to give us input on this Pokemon Masters thing, which seems a very cool idea, bringing loads of past trainers back and, you know, battling in some way. You know, my boy Lance was there, Lance from the Elite Four. So I was very happy to see his return, you know, and then you got all the classics like Misty and Brock. And Brock aggressively ripped off his shirt at one point for an attack, which was fantastic.
I'm very happy for you and all Pokemon fans. All right, man. So that's Pokemon Masters. The other thing which I saw was Pokemon Quest. And this is the one that came out for the Switch earlier on, like last year it came out, I think.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah, and this was the, was that the free-to-play one?
I think so, yes. That's right, yeah. And
it looked a bit Minecraft-y. It was blocky.
Yeah, that's right. Is it coming to China now or something?
That's right. China via NetEase, which means I imagine that's going to be a mobile thing. They're going to do a mobile version of it.
Yes.
Okay, cool. All right, then. Yeah, that's a lot of Pokemon.
It was, yes. It was.
Is it more Pokemon than we need, or do you want all this?
I mean, I love that they're being innovative with stuff like Pokemon Sleep. I mean, nobody's doing this sort of thing, but, you know, Nintendo and the Pokemon Company being weird and thinking of gimmicks like this. So I enjoy that sort of thing. Mm. Will I use it? We'll see. I don't think any of these are going to succeed Pokemon Go. I don't think anything can. It's different level. But the story solution's great. And I think Pokemon Masters potentially has something in it. But until we see more and actually see proper gameplay, it's hard to tell.
Yes, it's all speculation, I suppose. Speaking of which, we got the news a couple of weeks back that Microsoft and Sony were teaming up on a cloud gaming solution. So, which all sounds a bit vague and busy at the beginning, but it's been popping up, you know, bubbling around in the news since then, and it has got me to thinking. So, the way that this works is, you know, we were talking about Project xCloud a few podcasts back. So the idea that Microsoft's going to be bringing its games to the cloud. The end game of this is you can stream it on an iPad. You can stream it on your phone. And suddenly all of this stuff potentially becomes mobile gaming. The console world comes to mobile, for better or for worse. And this is a Microsoft system they've been setting up. Sony, obviously interested in this, as are all companies, because a lot of them are seeing this as the end game of gaming. There's at some point in the future, it's all going to go a bit Netflix, it's all going to go a bit Amazon Prime, and games are all going to be streamed over the, by then, astonishingly good internet connection, and the idea of consoles will seem outdated. So rather than trying to build their own infrastructure, Sony has decided to work with Microsoft on building their, or expanding, I guess, their Azure system, so which is the data centers that Microsoft has from which all this stuff is sent out, the big server farms and the tech that goes with it. So you've got two of the biggest rivals in gaming working together to make cloud gaming a thing.
Yeah, it's interesting as well that Sony actually picked Microsoft to work with, because there's obviously Google and Amazon that could support what they're looking for.
If they were wanting to stay kind of rivals and keep the separation between the two, then yes, they could have gone for either of those two companies. So the fact that they went for Microsoft is interesting on a number of levels, because on the one hand, perhaps Microsoft is better set up for what they're doing, because it's going to be a very, very, very similar solution, if not an identical one, because we're at the point now where back in the day, the consoles used to be quite different. They used to run on quite different tech, even down to the fact where we had, you know, games running on cartridges on Nintendo, which is still the case now with things like the Switch. But the core of the consoles were different. I mean, the PlayStation 3 was a good example versus the Xbox 360. They were totally different system architectures. So porting between one system to the other was actually really tricky. And that's why you had a lot of games running much better on the 360 than they ran on the PS3, because whoever had to do the port, if it was the company or whether they farmed it out to a third-party studio, they kind of struggled to make sense of it or to make the games run as well, because the cell architecture upon which it was based is quite difficult to code for.
Yeah, so now everything under the hood is much closer than ever before, really.
Yeah, the hardware's a lot more similar, and they're effectively little PCs. They're effectively little PCs running off little PC components, and not that much difference between the two of them. So ports are much, much easier to do, and it's just the horsepower of the individual consoles and whatnot. So when it comes to getting the Xbox games, first-party games, onto the cloud versus getting Sony games, first-party games, onto the cloud, arguably not a great deal of difference, especially if some of them have already been ported onto PC and whatnot. So the fact that they are partnering up, there is this possibility, it's quite pie in the sky, but there is this possibility that we could see a future where you can get both Microsoft and Sony first-party games off the same streaming network. Not just the fact they're housed in the same server farms and maybe there's like a Microsoft half and a Sony half or something because they're working together on this. There is the chance that they could do a Netflix thing where you've got all the different studios, all the different companies coming together and it all just gets pushed through Netflix, whether it's CBS or Disney or whatever. That's what's happened with Netflix. Now, it's kind of going the other way now, where everyone's splitting back up again, and Disney's going to have its own app and pull all its stuff off Netflix, and, you know, DC's got their own app, and so it's kind of gone the other way. But the first thing that happened was it all conglomerated, it all became one big lump.
Mm.
And it's not beyond the realms of possibility that this could happen, which would kind of be an end to the console wars.
Yeah, so are you thinking one where all games are just on one platform? So everything, Xbox, PlayStation?
Well, I mean, that's one possibility. It's quite pie in the sky.
Mm.
It's quite utopian. And I'm not necessarily saying that's what's going to happen. But I wouldn't have said before, a couple of weeks ago, that Sony and Microsoft would have paired up on this to work on this tech together, because they are effectively bitter rivals.
Absolutely. And the way Sony have handled cross-platform, you know, they've been very firm on, no, we're not interested, as opposed to Microsoft and Nintendo being like, you know, open the doors, we're more than happy to accommodate.
And Sony has caved on some of it, where they went, all right, then we will, you know, we'll do cross-platform with things like Fortnite and stuff. They went, all right, we're up for it. So they, you know, changed their tune as well. On the one hand, this could be complete nonsense, and they're just working on this Azure tech and the AI together, and then they're going to use it for completely, you know, separate things, and they'll keep separate, and that's a vested interest for them. Of course it is. At the moment, while they're still selling consoles, different bits of hardware that they need to ship, right?
Mm.
But when we get to the point much further down the line where maybe you don't need a console anymore, or maybe it's all running through, you know, a number of boxes and you can just stream it in through whatever you have. If it runs Google with their cloud thing, or if the Project X cloud thing doesn't require an Xbox to run it, which is ultimately the idea, you can have it running on a phone and all you need is an app. That app can run on any bit of tech. So suddenly you don't have to have a first party console. Therefore, there's not quite as much incentive to keep things Xbox exclusive or Microsoft exclusive, unless you're just trying to flog the different apps and you're going to have subscription services to either of them, which is, you know, what some people do. But there are situations, and, you know, Netflix is the prime example, where big studios, big independent dudes, rather than creating their own apps, they go, screw it, and they put it all in one place. And it's like, it's not beyond the realms of possibility.
No, it is possible. I think it's a few years off if it's ever going to come to fruition. I think It's just a sign of the times with Sony. I mean, they're a smart company, you know, the head of the console race currently.
Mm.
They realise, you know, streaming is the future. They need to get into it. And if you look at all the competitors, Sony are quite behind on this compared to the likes of Microsoft especially. You know, I think the only thing streaming-wise Sony have is PlayStation Home.
They've got PlayStation Now.
PlayStation Now,
that's their system, right? They've got, which is, it's worked, and I've played full games on it, actually, but It's, you know, only been around like 720 QWERTY. That is about to get upgraded to 1080p.
Yeah, I think it'll be very interesting once we know details of the PlayStation 5, how serious they're taking it.
But I've got to imagine it's going to be a big chunk of it, because I do think this is the point where folks are going to go, right, streaming is the future, and we need to make sure that our future consoles bear that in mind. But ultimately, forget the consoles a little bit. We need to be setting up this future where you can stream it to your browser, you can stream it on your PC, and most importantly for us, you can stream it on your phone. And I wonder how that's going to affect the way that game design goes. Because suddenly, if every game has the chance to be a mobile game or might be played on a mobile surface, as more and more people are picking up mobile phones as their first console, as the way that they learn to game, they're not picking up a controller necessarily, they're not picking up a DualShock. The first gaming console that all kids have now is their parents' iPhone or Android device or something. That's what everyone learns to play on, a touchscreen. Whereas we had that muscle memory when we were a kid, where the first thing we learned was on a joystick or on a, you know, a SNES pad or something, and that's how we learned to game. That's not how kids do it now. They get a console, they get a PlayStation, but almost guaranteed the first thing they do is they start swiping around on their parents' phone. And that's a completely different basis for, like, so for them, that's what games are at the beginning. And I've got to imagine that that's going to filter through into the way that games are designed, and the way that these kids who are playing now, who then go on 25, 30 years to become games designers.
Yeah, I can totally see that. And to be honest, I was thinking of sort of like what concepts would work from the transition. The only one that sort of stands out is how the Switch works. Obviously, you have the Switch on your, you have your big TV, and then you take it on the go. So if you have something for that, like mobile, we just swap in and out, something like that.
You'll just be able to push to screen. I mean, you can already do that now.
That's
so
true.
There's an element of that if you want to. But I'm very curious to see what the kids of today who've grown up with like Angry Birds as their first game, what they go on to do, what they consider retro when they're looking back at classic games and stuff. Do they, you know, are we going to see the 30 years from now, they're releasing like retro reskins of Angry Birds because that was the thing they first started playing?
That's crazy to think, yeah.
It basically, but that's the sort of reality of it. Yeah. So yes, this is an interesting one. Microsoft and Sony shaking hands on this tech. Didn't think I'd see that coming, but it could point to something very interesting in the future. Out and about this week. Before we get to the game new releases, you have been out and about this week, Matthew. And you've been watching people play Smash Bros.
I have, and I actually played myself.
Oh, I didn't know you competed. All right, so what was the event and how did it go down?
It was in Manchester. It was called Conquest 3 event, and it was part of, like, it's called Street Smash, which is it's around the UK, basically. Various tournaments happen. Yeah, so I went on Saturday, went up with a friend, competed in both doubles and singles, and spoke to loads of people. The organisers, and had a really good time. Yeah, I go to tournaments now and then with friends. I'm not the best. I'm lucky if I get through the first or second round, to be honest. More for the love of Smash Brothers, as listeners will know, I adore this series.
What version are they playing?
So Smash Brothers Ultimate, so the latest version.
Oh, okay. Because you mentioned that they like the GameCube version sometimes when they're playing tournaments, but this was the most recent Switch one.
That's right, yeah. So Melee is still played heavily, but Ultimate seems to be adopted more and more, which is cool. So, yeah, it was really good. There was 100 people there. I in doubles, did okay, got through, I think, first three rounds with my mate. And then in singles, I lost both mine straight away. So I was out, which was painful, but it was okay. It was close. It was close. That's the main thing to remember.
Who's your main then? Do you do mains with Smash Bros?
I do. I main Yoshi.
Okay, you're a Yoshi guy.
I am. As I said, not great, but my friend actually managed to get down to the top 17. Which is best he's ever done, so that was pretty good. So I'm writing a feature on that, by the way, so that will be going up in the next couple of weeks on PG, so keep an eye out for that.
Nice, ideal. So, back to the games, out and about this week on mobile. Well, I mentioned Very Little Nightmares came out this week. Now, someone else is doing the review for it at the moment, so we haven't had access to it. I have not played this yet, but this is the mobile version of the little side-scrolling horror-tinged game Little Nightmares, which came out on consoles a year or two ago. This one, as you mentioned before, adopts a more Lara Croft Go, Hitman Go style, where you're wandering around a grid, third-person perspective, and you're moving blocks and things out of the way, and then terrible stuff is coming after you, and you have to run. But haven't played it. I will definitely be doing a video as soon as we have the review ready to go. So Very Little Nightmares, that's out right now. In terms of stuff I have played, let's start with the weak source. WWE Universe came out. Now, you said this has been out in soft launch for a while.
Yeah, it was in soft launch for a good couple of years, I believe.
Oh, Jesus, okay. Wow, and this is what they came out with? So, the way this plays out is one-on-one wrestling. You have a choice of three attacks at the bottom of the screen. It's turn-based. You can go light, medium, or heavy attack. Those are your options. Light attacks, you tap it, and you just go whoop-huh, and do one of those silly slaps that they do where they pretend to hit each other. And that always connects. If you choose medium or heavy, there's an option they might defend based on the stats and the strength of the opposing wrestler. And then every couple of turns, one or other of you will launch into a special move. And then you get the little wavy wand thing where it goes back and forth from the red to the green, you know, flipping back like a little meter. And you have to tap it at the right point, like you're playing a golf game or something, to get maximum strength. And then ideally you wear your opponent's bar down, you pin them, and then that's it. You've done a win. I will never play this again. To me, this is just garbage. Like, the combat, say it's bitty and turn-based to the point where when you do a special move and they'll, you know, I don't know, power drive someone and your opponent's on the floor, when it then resets to the next move, it's just like the players teleport. There's no animation of the other dude getting up and then standing opposite one another. Suddenly, you're just standing opposite each other again, warp, and then you just choose an attack. And say turn-based wrestling like this where it's stop, start, nah, nah, nah. It's got no flow. It's got nothing exciting about it. Perhaps if you're really into the wrestling, then there is the fan service thing of like you have to unlock a box at the beginning where you choose if you want to go Raw wrestlers or if you want to choose like classic wrestlers or the new version, the next wrestlers that they're doing.
Yeah, I've seen Andre the Giant in it.
I think he is. Yeah. In the classic one, yeah. So you're building up a roster, and so it just becomes a collection thing. But it's filled to the brim with plenty of free-to-play, you know, currencies and boxes to unlock. So then within 5-6 minutes, they were offering me a, you know, £8 unlock to get some characters. But the gameplay is like, I have no idea why you would play this. It's tedious, and I can't believe it's been in soft launch for this long.
Yeah, that is a shame. I mean, the frantic nature of, like, wrestling games on console are always quite entertaining. So to hear it hasn't transitioned great.
I just feel so. I mean, it doesn't help that I don't like wrestling, so I don't have that little fan service thing to draw me in of like, oh, look, there's Rowdy Roddy Piper. It's not my jam. That's a personal thing. If you like it, you might get more out of this, but just pure gameplay, nah, nothing to it. So that's out right now, WWE Universe, free to download. Here's something. I don't know if you played this when it appeared on the Switch, I think a year or so ago, but Wonder Boy, The Dragon's Trap.
I didn't know. I really wanted to. It looked fantastic.
Right, so this is a reskin, effectively, of a game from the Master System. So people mostly try and bring back classic games from the SNES and the NES. And to be honest, I don't see Sega's early console getting much of a look in. But this is a Master System game that has been brought onto the Switch, first of all, with, I've got to say, an astonishingly beautiful new art style. This is the standout aspect of the game, where they've taken what was obviously a very basic pixelated side-scrolling platformer and then put the most gorgeous art style over the top. So it's like a beautiful cartoon brought to life. I'm going to go as far as comparing it to the Rayman Legends and that style, where it's like that good looking.
Yeah, I get that. Yeah, it's stunning. Very colourful as well.
Very colourful. Just, I'm so impressed by it. It looks beautiful. However, the gameplay underneath it remains 100% intact. So it is just that same game from 1989 beneath, which for me is very problematic when you're playing it on a touchscreen. I understand that the Switch version got quite good reviews because people go in knowing this is going to play like an 8-bit platformer from back in the day where it does that slight acceleration thing when you walk like Mario does. The jumps are quite sort of floaty and the attack is like a one-frame animation. Beep, beep, beep. So you have to be incredibly precise and know exactly what you're doing. Problem is, they've ported a floating D-pad onto the mobile version, and it is kind of square, like the Master System D-pad. But it's locked into one place, and they've got the two buttons on the other side, and it is horrible to control. Compounded by the fact that it's incredibly tough 8-bit pixel-perfect gameplay. So it's just really frustrating and awkward to play. It feels like, I picked it up and was like, wow, I can't believe a game that looks this good plays this bad. And then went, oh, 8-bit remaster from the thing. Oh, okay, I get it. So I'm thinking, if you play this on the Switch with a proper D-pad, this is a much better experience.
Yeah, I believe on Switch, I mean, I think it's done all right reviews-wise.
Yeah, I think it did pretty well. But for me, on mobile, this is a no. This feels very awkward and iffy to control. Watch the trailers, watch the videos, because it really does look amazing. And maybe if you have some fondness for the game, it might be more your thing. But I just don't think that mobile is the right platform for this. Maybe, as it's only just out, they're going to start introducing some additional controls, like, hey, maybe you can just do swipes, or maybe you can move the floating D-pad because it's locked to one place, and stuff like that. More intuitive mobile things. But for me, this feels like we've just slapped it onto mobile, and ugh.
So, art style, yes. Gameplay, no.
Yes, I'm afraid so. So that's Wonder Boy the Dragon's Trap. That's out right now, and that is a premium game. I forget. Hang on, let's find out for you exactly how much this costs. It's going to be £5.99. Yeah.
That's more than Pokemon Bank.
Certainly is. Not from me, I'm afraid. So, on the plus side, a mobile platformer that really does play beautifully, Death Hall. So I hadn't heard anything about this. This is a portrait-oriented pixel perfect platformer where you are wandering through a hellish stylized environment as this little, I don't even know what the character is, humanoid, but almost like he's made out of rocks or something. And you are going either left to right or right to left. It changes because the levels are randomly generated. And jumping, avoiding spikes, you know, platformer style. There are some beasties running around, jump on them. You'll collect some goodies that you can then use later. But about halfway through the level, or two-thirds through, you encounter this big, gaping, spasming orifice, which looks pretty grim. And as you pass it, it kind of goes, bwah, and erupts, and this big, giant face comes flying out of it, a red, gaping maw, and it starts chasing you down across the screen. And it's bouncing from the bottom of the screen, like, brah, jumping up and trying to munch, and then flying down again. So it's not just run. It's kind of bouncing along the bottom. And you have to keep going and pushing forward in order to avoid this thing. And as you move on to later levels, you get more and more enemies in your way, beyond beasties just wandering backwards and forwards. You've got these giant stompy rock creatures with spinning morning stars and stuff like that. So it becomes increasingly difficult to maintain the pace you need to get away from this gigantic, terrifying mouth thing.
Did it like Super Meat Boy a little bit?
Kind of. Like, in so much as it is a retro-inspired, quite hard platformer. But the chasing aspect, the pursuit bit that turns up in every level, that's the thing that kind of makes it feel a bit different. Also the fact that, like, sometimes you'll just drop through from a pit. You'll drop through a pit and land on the floor. And sometimes you're going right to left. Sometimes you're going left to right. It seems entirely random, which is only a little thing, but it does change the way you play slightly, the way your brain approaches it. But the platform is really tight, in complete opposite to something like the way the Wonder Boy feels on mobile. This feels locked on. You're making precision jumps right from the very beginning, even though you're in portrait mode. You've got a left, a right, and a jump button, and that's it. But they're at the bottom of the screen on your iPhone. There's not much space there, but it feels great. And the height on the screen is really taken advantage of, because you're not just running along a single layer. There are lots of stratas of platforms floating, and they go obviously very high, so you can climb up the screen as well. Graphically, it's great. Very nicely stylized. It really puts you under pressure, and it's very, very tough from the get-go, but satisfying stuff. Really interesting little bit of platforming here.
Nice.
It's £2.99. I haven't seen any reviews for it yet, and I don't know if it's going to do business, but I think it'll be a tough sell because it's a premium game and it's a retro-looking platformer thing, and I don't know whether they're going to make tons of money out of this, but it was the best platform thing that I played this week. So £2.99 for that one. Death Hall is the name, and I'm going to do a video. I think that's worth a look. I suspect we'll do a review of it as well. Finally this week, what do we got? Oh yeah, Warriors of Waterdeep. So this is a D&D game. of which there are a few already. We've got a bunch of different versions of the D&D universe. I still remember like first-person D&D games that were appearing on the Amiga, where you were like advancing a frame at a time. So you'd press forward and it would just like jump a block. And you get a different still screen, but it's still first-person perspective. And they released a couple of games that were a little bit like that for mobile not too long ago. But this version of D&D is done from a gridded perspective where you're holding in portrait mode once again. The battles themselves play out on a little grid. You've got a couple of characters. You're facing off against a couple of characters. It's turn-based. You can choose to move your character in a turn. You can choose to attack during a turn. And you've got your warrior and you've got your magey type person. You've got your ranger and all your classic D&D things. In many ways, this feels quite faithful to playing the classic combat of D&D.
Okay.
I don't know if you've ever done any actual tabletop role-playing, Matthew.
No, I have got a confession to make. I know very little about Dungeons & Dragons. I've never played any form.
It was more popular when video games weren't such a big thing back in the 80s. But I've got my brother who's 10 years older than me. So he grew up with it, basically, and was much more into it. And so introduced me to the idea. But I might not have found it otherwise.
No, I know there's still quite a lot of communities that still...
Oh, possibly. Yeah. It's still popular. But I think kids... Back in the day, it was like this was a way that you could play a game because there were no alternatives.
It was this or Pong, basically.
Yeah, whereas now there are plenty of alternatives and lots of very nice RPGs that you can get stuck into. So this feels a little bit more like when you encounter a scenario in D&D and it's like, right, you know, you can move this round. This guy's moving here. You're going to advance to a step and then the next round you'll be able to attack. And then you roll for your attack and see if it does any damage. And so it's got an element of that real turn-based stuff that you play in the game. Very simple and stripped down, don't get me wrong. And it's visually kind of, you know, basic. It's not flashy or anything like that. I've only played it for about half an hour. It's fine. It's ultimately a card collection game again, where you're leveling up your characters and it's free to play and, you know, loot boxes and all the rest of it. There's not a timer on it from what I can see. It never stopped me, but it's okay. I'd have to play it more to have a serious opinion, but I wasn't like appalled or anything. And it did have it for some reason. It did tickle a weird, like, this does almost feel a little bit like Dungeons and Dragons rather than just they've taken the license and made a completely different game out of it.
That's good, at least.
Yeah, it felt somehow familiar, and I guess that's quite good.
Do you have to use an internet connection at all times as well?
I don't know if it's always online. Like, I am always online, so I guess I don't get the warning popping up saying that I need to connect, because I'm not playing these things out in the wild, but...
It's just what I was reading underneath.
Oh, really? It has to be always online?
Yeah, it's saying it's a bit frustrating.
Oh, connected to the internet. Oh, that's annoying. Yeah, well... It's happening more and more now, just because they assume that you always are, and they want to track what you're doing, where you are. Mostly leaderboards and competitive stuff, but still, that's a bit of a pain. Either way, Warriors of Waterdeep is the name of that one. That's free to download on the App Store right now. I think that's it for the new releases. I think we will call it a day. Thank you all for listening. Do come back and join us again next week for more mobile chat. Do the liking, subscribing, etc., etc. See you next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.